Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, our theme is October, since it's October, and let's read a little bit of a essay by the very talented Jack Spadafora, Expectations of a Hauntingly Magical Month. October is a strange month, no longer summer, but not entirely fall. It represents one of those fragrant in-between times in Chicagoland when we live in a state of jaunty expectancy. We expect the foliage to gradually reveal its secret colors as nature tenders another majestic funeral. We expect the mornings to begin with a sparkly dew chilling the lawns, but then an Indian summer sun warming the days. And we can't help but expect a splashy burst of autumnal scarves and sweaters, football blankets, and pennants. Really, October is a gigantic impressionist mural, only we're in it. Perhaps what most of us expect the most is October's magic. Let's be honest, even the oldest and sages of us still harbor some of that little kid magic that once looked forward to mugs of hot chocolate and plates of taffy apples after school. And who can resist those heyday thoughts about what costume we will look best in at the party? And who can inhale the wet perfume of fallen leaves without the anticipation of white winter? Naturally, Halloween, with its brew of pagan traditions and Christian liturgies, looms as October's premier expectation. Somehow, even parents and coworkers get in touch with its spell. Maybe that's because Halloween has this funny way of still giving us once-a-year permission. Permission to pretend. To hide inside a costume. To let down our very proper hair and remember, ever so improperly, that magical realm of ghosts, goblins, and gobbledygook. Now, it's true that the magic of October shouldn't permit us to forget that serious elections draw close and that serious enemies draw even closer. Yet, is it so wrong to pause for the expectancies of such a special month? To leave the main road of work for the side road of wonder? Besides, we just can't let the kids keep all the pumpkins and possibilities October to themselves. Jack Spadafora. To leave the main road of work for the side road of wonder. Isn't that something we should do? Expectations of a hauntingly magical month, October. Well, let's enjoy a little song written by Michelle Legrand with lyrics by Marilyn and Alan Bergman from The Thomas Crown Affair, directed by Norman Jewison, starring Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway. You remember The Windmills of Your Mind. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. The Windmills of Your Mind, Michel Legrand's great music from The Thomas Crown Affair. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. The Joffrey Ballet celebrates its 20th anniversary of calling Chicago home in the 2014-2015 season, and its annual fall engagement brings the Joffrey premiere of a newly envisioned Swan Lake to Chicago for the first time, choreographed by one of ballet's most acclaimed choreographers, Christopher Wheeldon. Continuing Joffrey Artistic Director Ashley Weider's endeavor to bring reimagined story ballets to Chicago audiences, this performance represents the first time the Joffrey Ballet has ever performed a Swan Lake in its almost 60-year history. Swan Lake is presented at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress Parkway, in 10 performances only, October 15th through the 26th. Over the years, I have seen many versions of Swan Lake, noted Weider. This is an iconic ballet, and most people are familiar with the story in Tchaikovsky's magnificent score. I was at the premiere of Christopher Wheeldon's new production. I remember saying to him, if I ever direct a company, I want to present your Swan Lake. There's something so fresh and so well integrated about his idea. He is a master storyteller with an innate sense of musicality. After working with us, Chris wrote to the dancers, find purpose in every moment you are on stage. Good advice for anyone. Set to Tchaikovsky's timeless score and modeled from the original Lev Ivanov and Marius Petipa choreography, Wheeldon set Swan Lake in the 19th century of the Paris Opera Ballet, during the time when Tchaikovsky was actually composing Swan Lake in Moscow, and when a young impressionist named Edgar Degas was on the rise in Paris. Throughout the production, Wheeldon plays with themes of fantasy, illusion, and transformation, juxtaposing both time, setting, and characters to reveal a new way to see this classic fairy tale ballet. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, world-renowned dancer having performed with the legendary Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn, teacher, mentor, member of the Royal Ballet, former ballet master of the San Francisco Ballet, visionary in the world of dance, and the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Tchaikovsky's classic reimagined by Christopher Wheeldon, Swan Lake, the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, October 15th through the 26th, 50 East Congress at Michigan, our good pal, Mr. Ashley Weider. Ashley, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be on the show.
Well, always a pleasure, and I'm so looking forward to Swan Lake, which I enjoy immensely, but this new reimagining of it by Christopher Wheeldon, it's kind of exciting.
It's very exciting. I actually think you said it so clearly to your listeners, and, you know, I think it's very interesting how Christopher Wheeldon has used the daily rehearsal studio, a 19th century Paris Opera ballet studio, and the daily grind of rehearsing as the kind of jumping off point for the Swan Lake. So it's really a story within a story. And so Act One is set rehearsing for a new production of Swan Lake. And what's interesting is that he's really brought to life a lot of Degas' sketches and paintings of what it was like, you know, backstage or in the daily studio, and the kind of he didn't make them a kind of beautiful glossy, but more like a real sketches of what was happening at the time.
Very interesting, because Degas, almost half of his paintings were of the dancers in ballet, and exactly what you had said, he looked at them as that was their job. I mean, we sometimes look at that and say, well, there's kind of a vaulted feeling that we have about that. But to a ballet dancer, and you can attest to this, that's what you do for a living, and that's their job. And we see those in his paintings, which brings a whole different kind of feel to it as we start Act One of the ballet.
It does. And I think the other thing, too, Kevin, is that at that time in Paris, you know, there were patrons of the ballet, and especially, you know, wealthy men that gave money to make the productions happen. And in return for all of that, they had access to the rehearsal studios, and they maybe had access to some of the ladies, whether they would have dinner with them, whether they were given gifts. And Chris has shown that this patron who is paying for the new production of Swan Lake, and how he picks out one of the girls that he really likes, and the way Chris has then bought those people back in the second act, and the patron becomes von Rothbart, the evil sorcerer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the girl that he picked out is Odette O'Deal.
Okay.
And the young boy who's rehearsing turns out to be the prince. So I think that in so many parallels, he's made us really think about kind of real life and also fantasy, and where do we live? When does fantasy take over our minds?
And kind of interesting because, of course, the mom's there and she wants her son to be married, which is the storyline of Swan Lake. Of course, Swan Lake being the triad of Tchaikovsky's great ballets, The Nutcracker, Sleeping Beauty, and Swan Lake. And we see that story evolve, and then that love story which blossoms between Siegfried and Odette. It's a relationship of complete sweetness and absolute trust, uncompromising, unconditional, the love that Siegfried has for Odette and she for him. And it's just a beautiful love story.
It really is. And I think that, you know, within the scenic element of this particular production, and the studio walls are very transparent, so there are moments when you're in the studio and there are moments when you're in the lake. And I think just scenically, design-wise, it's really quite an ingenious set, and how it evolves. There are huge French doors in this ballet studio, and when the French doors open, it's kind of allowing his imagination to go further. And for the company, for the ballerinas taking on the role of Odette O'Deal, it's probably one of the most challenging roles a dancer can have. And it's one of those things that you work so hard to perfect it, and it's that kind of love and exhaustion that goes with delivering a role like this. So it'll be really fantastic to see the company take on all the challenges.
Is that a role that a female dancer would always aspire to be, not the movie, of course, notwithstanding?
Absolutely. I think that it has everything in it as a dancer. It utilizes all the technique that you ever learned, and to have to deliver that theatrically in a character of one of utter sweetness and goodness and the other one of utter seduction with a malicious side to her. So it allows them to kind of play a 360 of an entire character.
Now, when you stage this, this is an opportunity for the entire female corps de ballet to participate as the swans, correct?
It absolutely is. And as Christopher Wilden said, you know, he said to the ladies, he said, you are the ballet. You know, mm-hmm. you are absolutely central to the ballet. And he said, and all of you are Odette. You're all Odettes, he said. It's just one of you gets to do the pas de deux and the variations. But he said you should all feel everything that she feels.
But they're such an integral part because as they flutter with their arms and they dance and so forth, it's such an integral part of that whole story which they're participatory in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, Christopher Wilden has been very respectful and true to Ivanov and Petrova, but he has made for the group of swans, he's made them a very fluid, mm-hmm. very organic movement for them. And I think that in some ways it's much harder than standing and posing all the time as opposed to actually physically moving through it. And when you've got 20 people all doing that, it's incredibly effective.
The power of love overcomes the forces of evil with von Rothbart. I won't ask you how it ends because I'm looking forward to seeing how it ends because I know there's various endings sometimes for Swan Lake.
It's a very different ending, and I don't know. I find it I find it emotional, but it's in a very different way.
What's interesting too is I was reading up. The Joffrey never presented Swan Lake. That's amazing. I'm really surprised when I read that.
It is. And I, you know, it's very interesting, Kevin, because when I danced with the Joffrey in the 80s, Robert Joffrey, you know, wanted to do a Nutcracker. He knew how important it was for the company. So I was part of that original cast for the Nutcracker We also did the very well-known reconstruction of La Sacra de Printemps. Mm-hmm. And you know, Joffrey wanted to do more of these big ballets, and he felt that he had the company to do them. And the one ballet that he never got to see was Cinderella, which he always wanted the Joffrey to do, and which we now have. We have a beautiful production of Cinderella. Mm-hmm. And now we have Swan Lake for the first time in nearly 60 years. And I think that it's just pushed the company to another level.
Do people want to see, I know I do, I enjoy the great classical ballets like Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty, The Nutcracker, Giselle. Do people ask for that when they have conversations with you to bring back some of the classic ballets?
They do. I think, though, that people, you know, more and more, you know, as a director and when I travel, you know, around the world and talk to other directors, I think that our audiences, they want to see stories that contain the best of what everyone remembers, but they want them to be more relative to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that our audiences are far more adventurous than saying, no, I want a very, very traditional, you know, ballet. So I think that it allows us the artistic freedom to kind of reimagine what some of the story ballets are like. And I think, you know, this year alone, between a new production of Romeo and Juliet that was so successful, and people, the one thing that I heard from our audience, from young members to older members, was they related to it.
Right.
And we talk about, you know, relativity and being relevant, and I hope that this production, I think this production of Swan Lake very much is that.
Well, the initial season production, of course, was Stories in Motion. And again, we're continuing that motif or that theme throughout the season.
Mm-hmm. And what I loved about Stories in Motion was, you had two ballets, one from 1929 that was just a masterpiece, and then you had Lilac Garden, which was from the 30s, and then Raku, which was a very modern time. And again, I think what the audience is, they thought the program was really breathtaking because it took them on a journey that they could follow and they could understand what has happened in our art form about how we physically tell a story. And I think Swan Lake is a great continuation of that. And equally, next, you know, in February, when we have our Unique Voices program, which is the piece by James Kadelka to Johnny Cash,
mm-hmm.
There is a deeper story in there as well. So I think that we relate to stories. It makes us think about who we are. And they're a reflection of us, of who we are.
And I think it's interesting, too, as we segue from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake, a next production, of course, is something everyone looks forward to, is the great production of The Nutcracker by the Joffrey Ballet.
Absolutely. So that will be coming up in December, which will be very exciting. And, you know, the company always look forward to Nutcracker because it's something that they know really well. And I think that after they have really push themselves through Swan Lake, they're going to need, you know, a little bit of mental and physical release, because they are working, you know, 6 hours a day on Swan Lake, and especially for the women, you know, they have worked so diligently to really bring to life everything that Christopher Wheeldon wants from them.
I imagine a very emotionally draining project working on Swan Lake, Ashley.
It is. It you have to build a certain kind of stamina, and it's like being a really top athlete and
sure.
saying, "Okay, you are gonna absolutely sprint, and then you're gonna go the long distance." And knowing how to use your body and how to fire your muscles when there are things that you really have to attack, but then there's the long haul, which is to control your muscles in a really adagio manner. So for all of them, for the entire company, I think it's been a really great experience. I think that they've all grown artistically and technically, and I think doing these works, they keep the art form very much front and center. And I think that if we're going to be a legitimate, you know, world-class company, then this is what we need to be doing.
Well, I always look forward to seeing you, but I'm certainly looking forward to seeing Wieldon's Swan Lake next week. Swan Lake has charmed audiences since its St. Petersburg premiere in 1895 and is considered the embodiment of Russian ballet. Set to Tchaikovsky's magnificent score, with choreography by Marius Petipa and Lev Ivanov, the ballet tells the timeless story of a young prince named Siegfried who falls in love with Odette, a princess who takes human form at night, but each morning is turned into a swan by the evil sorcerer von Rothbart. In this consummate tale of love conquering all, the spell may only be broken if a prince pledges his eternal love and fidelity to her. The Joffrey Ballet is Chicago's premier ballet company committed to artistic excellence and innovation, presenting a unique repertory encompassing masterpieces of the past and cutting-edge works of today. Founded by visionary teacher Robert Joffrey in 1956, guided by celebrated choreographer Gerald Arpino from 1988 until 2007, the Joffrey Ballet continues to thrive under artistic director Ashley Weider and executive director Greg Cameron. The Joffrey is also committed to providing arts education and accessible dance training through its Joffrey Academy of Dance and Community Engagement Programs. The Joffrey Ballet celebrates its 20th anniversary of calling Chicago home in the 2014-2015 season, and its annual fall engagement brings the Joffrey Ballet of a newly envisioned Swan Lake to Chicago for the first time, choreographed by one of ballet's most acclaimed choreographers, Christopher Wieldon. Continuing Joffrey Artistic Director Ashley Witter's endeavor to bring reimagined story ballets to Chicago audiences, this performance represents the first time the Joffrey Ballet has ever performed a Swan Lake in its almost 60-year history. Swan Lake is presented at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress Parkway, in 10 performances only, October 15th through the 26th. And on the line with us right now is the Artistic Director of the Joffrey Ballet, our good friend Ashley Witter. Ashley, maybe a phone number website if people would like to get some information?
You can call 1-800-982-2787, or you can go online to joffrey.org/Swan Lake, and there's all the information that you need. All the casting is up there. And, you know, Kevin, just because a lot of our patrons and people that are getting tickets, we also have a series called Meet the Artist. And so they will be before some of the performances where we get to talk to either a choreographer or maybe the lead dancers that are not dancing that night, but really talk about what it is to take on these roles. So they're very informative, and they're open to anybody who has a ticket for any of the performances.
Boy, that's a great idea, because some people might feel a bit intimidated, but be able to get a little information or different insight listening to that before they go and see the ballet.
Absolutely. And I think that one thing that I've always believed is that, you know, the arts are for everybody. And the Auditorium, which is celebrating 125 years, is a great venue. And they have seen everything from the home of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, to the Joffrey, to opera, to rock concerts. They have housed everything. And I think that people refer to the Auditorium as the People's Theater. And I think that we hope that anybody feels they can walk in there and see a performance. So it's really great.
And I want to add, get your tickets for the Nutcracker. Those go pretty fast.
They certainly do. That's true.
Well, always a pleasure, my friend. I will look forward to seeing you next Wednesday and certainly enjoying Christopher Wieldon's Swan Lake.
I hope so. I will look for you.
Thank you, my pal.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ashley Weider, the Artistic Director of the Joffrey Ballet. Always a pleasure chatting with Ashley, and certainly looking forward to Swan Lake, one of my favorites, if not my favorite, next to the Nutcracker, of course. And that's going to be presented October 15th through the 26th at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, 50 East Congress at Michigan. For information, 800-982-2787. The Knits and Howe Experience, 10,000 Oh, I missed a zero. 1,000 shows. Success, let alone long-term success, is extremely rare in the cabaret business. The Knits Howe Experience is the longest-running cabaret show in Chicago, now in its 15th year. On October 25th, Knits and Howe will give their 1,000th performance. The Knits and Howe Experience was the brainchild of Bill Davenport. He saw two performers working at the club on two separate nights and suggested they work together. Mr. Entertainment, Daryl Knits, and Mr. Music, George Howe, formed their alliance in late 1999 and have not looked back. They started on Fridays, moved to Saturdays, performed on both Fridays and Saturdays for several years, and now can be seen on Saturdays in the front room of Davenport's from 10 to 1:30. The show is part piano bar request, part audience participation, part stand-up comedy, always spontaneous, and the wildest party in town. The Experience runs the gamut from pop songs to show tunes, standards, jazz, and blues. Nitz has an amazing repertoire of vocal impressions. George is a walking encyclopedia of musical theater, and both performers have incredible repartee with each other and with their audience. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning stage personality, master showman, impressionist, nationally recognized vocalist, director, producer, teacher, mentor, one of the driving forces in the cabaret scene in Chicago, president emeritus of Chicago Cabaret Professionals, now celebrating the 1,000th performance on October 25th of Chicago's longest-running cabaret show, the Nitz Howe Experience, at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee, and The Song is a Thing, the 16th annual Chicago Cabaret Professionals Gala Benefit 2014 at the Park West, 322 West Armitage, Sunday, October 12th, beginning at 6. Our good friend, the great Daryl Nitz. Daryl, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
How are you?
Well, I stumbled. It was 10,000, not 10,000.
It's not 10,000.
It seems like 10,000.
I'm not old enough to give 10,000 shows. It's just, yeah, it's our 1,000th show.
But you've done 10,000 impressions.
Maybe so.
And all that. That's quite an accomplishment, and congratulations. And the longest and most successful cabaret show in Chicago for all these years.
Well, I have to thank you. I have to say it's because of the audiences that keep coming back, and we keep building new people. You know, our audience ranges in ages from, you know, kids in their 20s to you get people coming in to celebrate an 80th birthday, a 90th birthday. You know what I mean? And it's, so we're running the gamut of all kinds of music and styles, and our show's always changing. You know what I mean? Like, we just, I don't know if you heard that song, I'm All About the Bass, No Trouble. Like, we just started working that up and been doing that for about a month. And, you know, we've got some Lady Gaga stuff. We'll do Frank Sinatra. Of course, now Lady Gaga's working with Tony Bennett, so it's like, I don't know, maybe that's what we need to figure out, a way to bring those two together, you know? But, yeah, the audiences are one of the reasons why we, you know, people say to me, when are you going to stop, you know? And I was like, well,
I think what they say is stop. They don't say, when are you going to stop? They say, stop.
Yeah, they say, please stop.
Please stop.
No, but it's, you know, it's still fun. It's still enjoyable. And even with a thousand, our, you know, there's a new space. It's not a new space, but the new space doing cabaret called The Back Room. And the week after our 1,000 show, we're doing our 1,001 show at like 7 o'clock at night at this place called The Back Room. And that's a venue down on Rush Street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, the audiences of Chicago are so great that they give us a reason to come out and sing our songs. And they come and see us and come and see us again and again. And, you know, that's sort of, I guess, the secret to our longevity, you know, is the constant sort of changing of the songs and the material and playing with the audience. And so far, people haven't seemed to get tired of it.
I thought maybe you and George went to grammar school together. You've just been doing this for years, because that's what the feel is.
Well,
when
I'm speaking to you from a grammar school right now, but I didn't go to grammar school with George.
But, I mean, that's the feel that you have. You guys, you know, you finish each other's sentences and yeah. Or start them, too. But yeah. That's what makes it so welcoming, I think. And I think that's the one of the attributes that you have and George has.
Yeah, thank you. People tell us that they come back because of sort of the banter and the repartee that we have, but they know that we care that they are there and that we're appreciative of them there. You know what I mean? We never take our audience for granted.
Who are some of the people that, when you started out, you kind of said, you know, I'd like to try what they're doing or maybe make it my own?
I can actually tell you the story. You know, on that night of our 1,000 show in the back room at 7:30, I'm doing a show called Bright Lights Big City, which is a 90-minute sort of exactly what you're talking about, who inspired me when I was starting. I've been singing in Chicago for 25 years. And Pudgy Cardella was the first person. I would go and see her. She was at a place called Palette. She was a comedian who pretty much had an opening number, a closing number, and one or two numbers in the middle of her 90-minute act that involved the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a song like Playmates, Come Out and Play With Me, or Ring Them Bells, which is actually a song that I do now, totally paying tribute to her. She passed about 5 years ago. She was like 68 or 69. She lived out in, she moved out to Vegas, but she's from Northbrook. Pudgy Cardella was her first and last name. I'd go see her, became friends with her. She had like the Showtime special, and I was hanging out with her after her show one night in the bar, and I said to her, I go, you know, Pudgy, I'd like to do a show like you do. I just want to sing a whole lot more. And she just looked at me and said, you know, you should. And so I took her at her word, and all of a sudden I'm doing like, my first gig with her was at a show like Carol Speakeasy down on Wells. It was like a kind of a scary little place.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she's like, she was the host, and then she's like, so what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to do a song called Big Bruce, and then I'm going to do Ring Them Bells. And she's like with the bells and the whole thing. I go, yeah, if you don't mind. She's like, oh, I haven't done that in years. And that's kind of how I got started in this. I mean, other people along the way here in Chicago, like Buddy Charles and Nan Mason, Denise Tomasello. Denise Tomasello was so huge in encouraging me. I mean, she's the one that said, you know, yeah, you're funny and you do all these impressions, but, you know, you cheat us when you are just giving us one ballad in a show. You really have a nice singing voice and a great presence, and you should do more like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Chicago cabaret community is very supportive of each other. Like you mentioned the other show, the show The Song's a Thing, this Sunday at the Park West. The woman that's getting honored there, Denise McGowan, she used to book Pudgy.
Really?
You know, and I'll call and ask her for a Pudgy story, or she'll, you know, call and tell me a Pudgy story, you know, something like that. And Nan Mason was friends with Pudgy. They all knew each other like that. And then you're coming up in the ranks, the fellow performers are very encouraging of, you know, the veteran performers.
Mm-hmm.
Are encouraging of the new performers, which is, now that's why I do what I do. You know, I coach people, I direct their shows. You know, I've got a show tonight, Melissa Young's bringing a show that I've directed. A couple weeks back I did a show, Sherman Brothers show I directed, with some new talent. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're good for that, because it doesn't affect your pride to help young people come out and try their hand at cabaret. And I think that you sublimate your own character and are able to share that and help other people. I think that's what one of your greatest attributes is.
Thank you. I mean, I do that because that's what people did for me.
Right.
To me,
right.
It's like they set the bar like, no, this is what you do. This is what you should be doing for other people. I mean, they didn't tell me that, you know. The greatest advice Pudgy ever gave to me was, you know, people don't want to hear your bad stuff, you know, going on in your life. You're there for them. And you want to keep it always about the audience, always fun, and make them know that you are so appreciative that they are there. And that's what I've tried to do.
And I think you see that with some performers, Daryl. Of course, you're on the stage quite often. Some people, it's like they're doing you a favor by being out there entertaining you, or they mail it in. And
right.
you can see that. You can feel that sincerity isn't there. I remember having the opportunity to talking with Olivia Newton-John and saying to her, you know, we all do what we do for a living. I'm sure you don't have to do this. She says, I, Kevin, I enjoy doing this. And there's a big difference. And Johnny Mathis feels the same way, you know. And that's interesting to hear. Yet you see some people that do, you know. Well, him here, so here I am.
Johnny Mathis interview. I mean, seriously. I mean, that's the kind of person that I want to be like. I want to be singing for as long as I possibly can, and I don't want to be singing at people. I want to be singing for them.
Right.
And
right.
I think that is the big difference. And I think, you know, I mean, I joked about Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett, but, you know, Tony Bennett's another person that's been singing for his audience, not at them, for all these years, you know. And I just saw an interview. I mean, that's kind of one of the things that he was sort of trying to teach Lady Gaga. She's got a great talent and a great voice, but it's not, Lady Gaga's more of that, like, come see me
right.
be a crazy person.
Right.
But he's trying to get that heart of hers out. But she's kept it guarded so many years. So that,
right.
that's kind of that idea of being an open vessel, if you would, I guess.
Well, you'll see that when you come to Davenport's on the 25th. Of course, it's going to be a great evening. And anything special in mind you have for us? Of course, you
night.
Never know, right?
Oh, no, we're actually working up. For both shows, we're working up new material for both. So some new medleys and new songs, even a new opening number. So this is going to be fun.
Now, of course, the 16th on Sunday, the 12th, the 16th annual Chicago Cabaret Professionals Gala Benefit 2014 at the Park West, something you look forward to every year, having been such an integral part of the Chicago Cabaret Professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. We're honoring Steve Wallum and, as I mentioned, Denise McGowan. This year, Steve Wallum is on Nurse Jackie currently in Showtime, and Denise McGowan has been booking talent in Chicago for so many years, and she runs the Pettorino's Monday Night Live, which has been very successful for the last 5-6 years. And, it's always a nice time to come together as fellow artists in the city and put on a show to raise our profile a little bit. And raise some money for the organization as well, so people can actually bid on things like we have one where people can bid and become a part of our show, like for an extended period of time, or choose somebody that they want and, you know, get like 20 minutes out of our show for them. But other people are putting in bids and things. It's become quite a fundraiser. It's a really nice event at the Park West.
Are the opportunities out there for cabaret as they have been in the past, Daryl?
I say yes. It's just that the venues change. So you might show up at the doors and they're gone, but you know what? Skokie Theater reopened. Or the back room is starting to do cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Davenport's is sort of the staple. It's been around. Hopefully it'll stay around. But new places open up, new little theaters try it, then some theaters come and go. You know, we had 3160 just close, and they're not going to be having music there anymore. But, you know, then I see that, like this back room I didn't even know about. There's a whole series that started last week with Kimberly Gordon and Spider Saloff, and it's running until like at least Thanksgiving, I know, and it's bringing in quite a tour de force of jazz and cabaret singers on every Friday and Saturday. So,
the advice you'd give a young person if they say, I'd like to be in cabaret?
Yeah, the advice I'd give somebody is go understand you're not going to make any money at this. But if you stick with it long enough, you could maybe, you know, if you're a piano player, you might be able to make money. But you don't go into it because you want to make money. Go into it because you feel that you have something to communicate through song. That's why I went into it. And I haven't been disappointed. So now, looking back at all this stuff, I never would have thought I would have had a weekly gig. I've done 1,000 shows, had a home base, nightclub, none of these things. That's not what I went after. I just went out because I had a song in my heart, and I wanted to share my story with people, and people listened.
Well, lucky for us, and you'll never be disappointed when you go to a Nitzhau Experience show. Of course, 1,000 shows, October 25th, Chicago's longest-running cabaret show, the Nitzhau Experience at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee. For information, 773-278-1830. And Sunday, October 12th, the 16th annual Chicago Cabaret Professionals Gala Benefit 2014, The Song is a Thing at the Park West, 322 West Armitage. For information, 312-409-3106. You're a dear friend, and certainly congratulations, very sincere congratulations on your success. And please say the same to George. And if you ever need the word to get the word out, we're here for you. And
I
congratulate you deeply, my pal.
Thank you so much. Hi to Kimberly for me.
I'll do it. Take care, my pal.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Daryl Nitz, 1,000 performances with he and George Howe again at the Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee. For information, 773-278-1830, October 25th. It's going to be a party. I always enjoy chatting with Daryl, but I sincerely congratulate both he and George Howe on their accomplishment and their achievement and the milestone of 1,000 shows. Giordano Dance Chicago, following a record-breaking spring 2014 engagement, returns to the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph Drive, with an electrifying program of new work and audience favorites Friday, October 24th and Saturday, October 25th at 7:30. The exciting program will feature the world premiere of Feeling Good Suite, a new Broadway-inspired full company work choreographed by award-winning choreographer Ray Leeper, known for So You Think You Can Dance and America's Got Talent. This marks the first work Leeper has choreographed for the company. Ray's connection with Giordano began many years ago when my father, company founder Gus Giordano, pulled the 12-year-old Ray up on stage during a workshop at a dance convention. Since then, the relationship has grown through Ray's ongoing involvement with GDC's Jazz Dance World Congress. Ray's exhilarating new work not only reflects his deep understanding of the company and our roots, but Giordano's core belief in the joy dance holds for dancer and audience member alike, says Giordano Dance Chicago's artistic director, Nan Giordano. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning businessman, advocate for Chicago's performing arts community, professional dancer, musician, arts administrator, dance educator, board member and arts patron, Peace Corps volunteer, degree geologist, entrepreneur, marketing professional, a person sincerely dedicated in sharing his love for the arts with others, and the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago, now presenting their fall engagement at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph Drive, Friday, October 24th, and Saturday, October 25th at 7:30, our good friend, Mr. Michael McStraw. Michael, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. And boy, that introduction, I think I've been busy.
Well, very well deserved. Well, you're very busy, no question about that. I like this story. Now, Mr. Giordano brought Ray up on stage when he was a kid?
Right.
So, that's a great story.
Ray is now, of course, a very productive professional
sure.
adult. But when he was 12 years old, he had gone to his first dance convention that Gus Giordano was teaching, and Gus always found in the audience people who had that certain something, and Ray possessed that. So Gus brought Ray up onto stage, and of course, for a 12-year-old, that was a defining life moment.
Oh, I bet.
And that moment has lived with Ray all this time. And then, as Ray's career took off, Ray came back and he taught and he choreographed through the Jazz Dance World Congress, which was one of the many things that Gus Giordano had created and put into play. We've now held the Congress 17 times. I'm not sure which time it was that Ray was there, but indeed, this is how our relationship with Ray Leeper began and how it's perpetuated through that very generous and kind gesture from our founder, Gus Giordano.
You know, there's an old saying, Michael, it's a great big world, but a very small loop. And everything is serendipity, the good fortune or luck of making desirable, interesting, or fascinating discoveries by chance.
Right.
And that's what happened. And here now, Ray's come back full circle, and now he's participating, and someone else will come up on stage that he'll introduce to dance.
You're absolutely right, Kevin. Happens in our world all the time.
Sure, sure. How exciting. That's terrific. Of course, his work, Feeling Good Sweet, what's that going to be about?
Oh, my gosh. It is a work about exactly what it says, about feeling good. We want our audience to sit there and enjoy, oh, gosh, I think it's about 10, 11 minutes of this beautiful Broadway-inspired, more traditional jazz that begins with Michael Bublé singing Feeling Good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Aretha Franklin singing Dr. Feel Good, and then a brand new arrangement of Get Happy from a West Coast composer by the name of Michael Brennan, with whom Ray Leeper has been working. They're actually collaborating on a Broadway-bound musical, of which this Get Happy arrangement is part. And Michael Brennan helped create all the incidental music that ties these disparate pieces of music together. And it is... just think Giordano Dance Chicago at its best. It is sultry, it sizzles, it is romantic, it's got power, it's celebratory. You cannot watch this piece without breaking into a giggle. It is so good.
Well, I mean, it's being a little redundant because every time anyone comes to a Giordano Dance Chicago program, they feel good.
That's true. Think of this as the crowning moment.
Okay, there you go. There you go. There you go. Everybody feels good when they're around you and Nan. So that's.
And you know, the other thing, Kevin, is that the piece, because of Ray's aesthetic and where Ray has gone to create this piece, the last section is built around a dance form we don't hear much about anymore, and it's from the 60s. It's from my childhood. It's the frug.
No, really?
It's wonderful to see how he has taken that structure, those rhythms, and turned it into something so much bigger. But I have to chuckle every time I see the Froog.
Back to Hullabaloo here right now, Mike.
Those are dances my mother taught me. So.
Well, you know, they're bringing back Fleetwood Mac. There's no reason they can't bring back the Froog, right? That's terrific. That'll be a lot of fun and very energetic. Will you start with that work?
No, that will close.
Oh, that will close the work. Okay, so if you build up to that.
Yes, yes.
So the people are just dancing right out the door when they're finished.
That's what we want. We want, you know, Nan Giordano often says, I want our audience to be taken on a journey with our different dance styles, the different emotions that it elicits, the different musical styles. I want people to feel joy. I want them to feel a little more something inside. Then I want them to walk away wanting more and having felt good for having spent this time with us.
You know, I'm going to paraphrase. I'm trying to think if I got the words here right. What Hans Christian Andersen said, when words fail, music speaks. And if you kind of continue that, dance just makes you scream, right?
Yeah. That's true. I'm sure that's what he said. That's what he really had in mind.
Now, of course, another work is Roni Koresh's Exit 4, which, now, Roni's had presented with Giordano before.
Roni had a long affiliation with the organization as he and his company performed at Jazz Dance World Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Exit 4, which premiered in October of 2013, was the first work that Roni had done on Giordano Dance Chicago. In fact, it's the first work that he's done in the Chicagoland area. And this work is very different. It is longer than we usually present because it has so much to say. It is built around his experience of having been in the Israeli army as a young man.
Hmm.
And so it is much built around the passion that comes from living and working within a climate that is based on war. That's not to say the piece is not without its hope and its joy, but it is a powerful, very in-your-face kind of piece, and it shows our dancers yet another side of their versatility. Very wonderful piece. That'll close out the first half.
And David Robertson, Entropy.
Correct. That's a favorite. We've had that piece in our rep since 2002. Davis Robertson is a former Joffrey dancer, and this piece is really just rhythmically complex. It's got a different emotional tone than all the other works on the program. We bring this back every couple of years because it is such an audience favorite. And that piece, too, is for all 10 dancers.
And finally, John Lehrer's A Ritual Dynamic. And Lehrer has his own dance company, does he not?
He does. He has a company outside of Buffalo. I think they are now celebrating their 10th year. I hope I got that right. But, you know, they're very... One of the things that Giordano Dance Chicago has done has been to spawn a lot of careers, much like the story with Gus and Ray and bringing a 12-year-old in. People come into our organization, they perform with us a while, and then they go off and they become important choreographers, important leaders of their own organizations, and John Lehrer certainly fits that bill.
Is there a specific theme when you sat down and put these various dances together, you and Nan, and thought about what we wanted to present when the audience was kind of looking at this?
Nan takes the pieces of our existing repertoire. You know, we've been around for 52 years. We have created over 151 separate works.
Oh.
So she looks to those pieces that she wants to bring back, those pieces that have just been created, and we want to have a little more shelf life out of them. Plus the inclusion of new works, you know, the new work from Ray Leeper, Nan had said to him, we want a work that does this. We want a work that is Broadway-inspired. We want a piece that is joyous. That's what we want. So that's where the dialogue, the discussion begins at the beginning of the process. But then she moves things around. She figures out the flow, the total running time, which pieces work at the beginning of the program, the ending of the program, in the middle of the program. And that's all that goes into her thinking, and it's not uncommon to have a program take, a month to really nail down to get the right flow. And then you have the practical considerations of who's in this piece and how much time does it take to change and are they going to be able to endure if we have them doing six pieces in a row, are they going to have the stamina to get through? And our dancers are known for their athleticism, but it is a practical consideration.
And let's not lose sight of that. They are athletes.
They are world-class athletes.
How many members are in the ensemble, Mike?
We have five men, five women in our first company, which is fairly typical for us. Then mm-hmm. we have our our apprentice company, which is the Giordano II. And then we have a middle group of people called our performing associates. They are really the people who are on the sidelines, who are ready to go if we need an extra person in rep for a particular reason, or if we happen to have an injury that needs someone else in. So all told, we have 16 dancers.
But which isn't a lot with all the productions you put on.
No, we again, have I mentioned that our dancers are athletes?
Right. Very good ones.
And Kevin, the really cool thing about our team is that they want to be performing. They mm-hmm. want to be in as many pieces on the stage as possible. They understand how relatively brief the performing career can be for a professional dancer, and they want to squeeze every moment of value and joy out of the experience as possible.
I suppose asking you this question better than anyone, is the business of a dance company challenging?
Oh, absolutely. But let me counter that by saying it is also filled with some of the most joy out of any of my professional experiences.
Sure. And you've had many.
I've had many.
Yes, you've had many. And I don't say that lightly, because you've been in the Peace Corps. Of course, you were in Sierra Leone and West Africa. You probably couldn't come to Chicago anymore because of what's going on now.
I know.
I mean, I just heard that on the news this morning. But, you know, you've been in the business world and so forth. You've worn a lot of different hats, and now you're doing something I would think that is not only your aspiration, but certainly something that you're doing because it's a joy for you.
That's absolutely true. But back to your question about running a not-for-profit, of course it has its challenges. With an organization like Giordano Dance Chicago, we have so many riches and so many blessings and so many people around us who believe in what we do that even the challenges are things that we get through. You know, funding for the arts is always it's an omnipresent difficulty,
right.
But we find the joy, we find the celebration even on the administrative side. So what happens in the office is what happens on stage with our dancers.
You know, you put on a particular program, and I certainly would expect that Feeling Good Suite, you know, you're going to knock it out of the park. You know, that's the way it's going to be. But do you ever put something on, and afterward it goes, man, that wasn't a good idea?
Oh, that happens. I mean, you know, that's one of the risks and joys of creating new work, is it not? That you are getting talented people together with an idea, and you put it on stage, and sometimes once on stage, it's an immediate home run. Other times it needs a little tweaking. And other times you go, okay, that was it. It happens infrequently, but it can happen.
And what you do so well, and what Nan does so well, and what Mr. Giordano did so well, and you continue that legacy, is you stimulate and engage the audience's imagination, and you stimulate and engage the audience's creativity, and you stimulate and engage the audience's intellect, and you have fun doing it, Michael.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. We do. You know, our company possesses something that is really rare, and it's that immediacy, that energy, I like to say, that goes from our dancers and kind of crawls across the stage and out into the audience. And that ability for our performers to touch our audience members in a way that makes it personal for them is one of the hallmarks of Giordano Dance Chicago, and something that we work very hard to continue and preserve and protect.
Something we all will look forward to. Giordano Dance Chicago, currently under the leadership of Artistic Director Nan Giordano and Executive Director Michael McStraw, is a world-class dance company and a driving force in Chicago's thriving performing arts community. The company's new works continually expand the boundaries of jazz and contemporary dance. The company also has an active outreach and education program in 3 Chicago public schools. Giordano Dance Chicago, following a record-breaking spring 2014 engagement, returns to the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph Drive, with an electrifying program of new work and audience favorites Friday, October 24th and Saturday, October 25th at 7:30. And on the line with us right now is the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago, our good friend Michael McStraw. Michael, a phone number, website, if people like to get some information?
Absolutely. The Harris box office is 312-334-7777. Very easy. And or someone can go online to harristheaterchicago.org.
Come out to see Giordano Dance Chicago's fall engagement and feel good about it. Will you please, there you go. Feel good about telling Nan that I miss her. Tell her I said hello, and wish her certainly great luck, and always a pleasure chatting with you and getting the word out about Giordano Dance Chicago,
Thank
Michael.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it very much.
Take care, my pal.
You're welcome. You too. Bye-bye.
Michael Mastra, the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago. And you'll feel good. You'll feel good after you listen and see the great program put on by Giordano Dance Chicago and their fall engagement at Harris Theater for Music and Dance, October 24th and 25th. And certainly it should be a great, great, great evening. For information, 312-334-7777. Don't want to forget to remind everyone to get their Halloween cupcakes at our good friend Pam Rose's Swirls Cupcakes, 705 West Belden. She's got some special chocolate marshmallow, rich chocolate cake filled with marshmallow cream, layer of chocolate ganache, marshmallow buttercream drizzled with orange and purple buttercream, and garnished with an edible chocolate pumpkin. Ooh, it looks beautiful. It looks look beautiful. Our good friend, Happy Halloween, of course, comes in gluten-free and vegan gluten-free options. Again, ask for Pam Rose, Swirls Cupcakes, 705 West Belden. For information, 773-404-2253 or online swirlscupcakes.com. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, our good friend Ashley Weider, the artistic director of the world-famous Joffrey Ballet, now presenting Tchaikovsky's classic Reimagined by Christopher Wheeldon, Swan Lake, at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, October 15th through the 26th, 50 East Congress at Michigan. For information, 800-982-2787. Should be an experience, a different experience in the theater. Daryl Nitz, master showman, Mr. Entertainment, now celebrating the 1,000th performance on October 25th of Chicago's longest-running cabaret show, The Nitz George Howe Experience at Davenport's Piano Bar, 1383 North Milwaukee. For information, 773-278-1830. And the 16th Annual Chicago Cabaret Professionals Gala Benefit 2014, The Song is a Thing, at the Park West, 322 West Armitage, Sunday, October 12th, beginning at 6. For information, 312-409-3106. A great evening of great talent and entertainment and all the special people in the cabaret world in Chicago. And finally, Michael McStraw, the executive director of Giordano Dance Chicago, now presenting their fall engagement at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph Drive, Friday, October 24th and Saturday, October 25th. For information, 312-334-7777. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have at the very least done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
The music, the music.